Okay, so most animators know about the Animator Survival Kit. It's often preached as sort of like the Bible of our industry. It teaches many, many techniques, and it's very easy to follow because it demonstrates it visually. It shows this is what a keyframe is. This is what an arc is. This is how in-betweens work. And there's other books that are very, very good, like Illusion of Life, which sort of takes it a step further. From what I know, I think it sort of assumes that you already know how to animate a little bit, but how do you make it look as if your characters are alive? How do you make your characters act in such a way that it can give your audience a reaction? How do you make them, you know, laugh and cry and relate to them and things like that? But I've never been able to get through that book because it's just essays. It is an enormous phone book of very small font, and I struggle with that. I really hope there's an audiobook somewhere out there. But then I got this huge shock when you were telling me that you were exactly the opposite. Tell me more.
I'm having a difficult time understanding how the text, you read it and it's there.
Because we work in animation, we draw things visually, you watch them. Seeing the example drawn visually is surely a clearer example.
I mean, I guess so. But I feel like the clearer example, as far as visually goes, is for me to actually try to do it and then not, and then fail at it and then try to do it again, versus looking at somebody else who did it. That doesn't help me because it's what somebody else did. I mean, unless I try to just copy that, it only has so much use, just copying.
What about the objectively best animation tutorial series on YouTube, which is the Alan Becker 12 Principles series?
Okay, well, I haven't been through that series, so I can't speak to that particular one.
Oh, okay. I'll be interested in hearing your thoughts on that, because, like, it demonstrates them all so beautifully visually with so many examples of here's how it works, but also here's how an animation falls apart if you don't use it. And I find those examples to be very informative.
Maybe I'll have a watch through that series. I say that, but I purchased a class on acting in animation, like how to deal with that. So I haven't even been through that. That's about 40 hours worth of content.
40 hours. And is that like, how is something like that presented?
I don't know. I haven't been through it yet.
If it's all like videos and demonstrations and things, are you going to be thinking, oh man, just give me a book?
Yes, because the thing with the book, and even now, if it's a... Especially with the computer now, when you can press Control F to look something up, words and phrases stick in my head pretty well. Drawings don't. That's weird. But like someone's drawing of how a horse walks is not going to stick in my head. So I find that every time I have to go and look that up. But the question is, if I had a text description of it, would it actually make it easier? I don't know. That would be a weird thing to describe in text.
That is very weird. This is probably one topic more than most. I'd be very interested to hear what is the ratio of viewer opinion.
On how do you learn? Okay, so because for people listening to the podcast, we're going to assume that most of them are interested in art, if not specifically animation, if not have not tried to do it themselves. Like most people will have had some attempt.
Yeah, I'd say it's a high percentage aspiring artists and animators, and the rest are at the very least enthusiasts.
Yeah, so then the question is how, when you're trying to learn a new technique, do you find it more useful to look at pictures of that technique being done, or to read how the technique is done, or to actually do it? Like, that's the three, what learning types do we have? Reading the text, hearing an essay. Oh, hearing. We forgot about the hearing one. I suck at hearing.
Hearing I'm cool with. Like, audiobooks are great because you can listen to those while working.
Yeah, but that's entertainment. How much of that do you retain?
Oh, so much more. So much more if I'm hearing it than reading it. Absolutely.
Really? You're so different. I think we're very different learners. That's weird. I wouldn't have expected that.
I feel like I'd be in the majority for being in this medium, like working in like visual art stuff, as opposed to like coding or accounting, which are things that I'm interested in how words and numbers work, because I have to, you know, write scripts for YouTube videos and things, and I'm making a game, so it makes sense for me to understand how code works. But retaining any of that information in my head is next to impossible.
That's weird.
Well, you were telling me a couple of weeks ago about a friend of yours who is unable to visualize images in their head at all.
So this isn't a friend of mine. This is a video I watched by a professional artist who throughout her entire life thought it was normal to not be able to picture stuff in your head. So she's an artist who cannot visualize things in her mind.
So does that mean she would forget what things looked like until she saw them again?
So what it means is she can't just draw a background, for example. She has to pull up a whole bunch of reference material and have that on hand to look at. Because, like, the images don't appear. There's nothing there.
Yeah, it's bizarre because I feel like surely you would just forget what things look like when they're not around. Oops, I can't what is a tree?
And that's kind of how it is. Like, if the video, I probably put, let me write down to include that with this episode.
But that is very fascinating because I think everyone probably has this to, it's probably like a spectrum to different degrees of intensity where some people are,
I don't know.
No, just able to visualize things in their minds more or less than others. Yeah, in general. Because you've got photographic memory at the other end of the scale.
Or numbers. Like, some people see things in numbers, which is, it's like hard to imagine, right? Because chances are, maybe there's one person listening who can do that or who thinks that way or their mind works that way. But like this person, I think it was to the point where you could say the color red, but that doesn't, they can't imagine what that looks like.
That's so bizarre. Like the mind is crazy, right? So I feel I am kind of like this with numbers because I'm, again, interested in maths and code and stuff like that, but I suck at it. If I have reference on hand,
really?
If I practice it over and over again, if I devote 100% of my concentration and energy and I start punching the table and gritting my teeth and getting angry, yes, I can do it a bit. But if I stop for a week or so, it's all gone.
What, the code and math? And
yeah.
Really? I'm the opposite. Those things I'm pretty good at.
Because none of that stuff can be retained in my head. It has to be in the moment and now. That can be okay, but it takes ages to figure things out because I can't really see how things connect into themselves. I'm fascinated that they do connect into themselves, but it simply doesn't come to me naturally. So I almost need to assign symbols and shapes and ideas to those things in order to give them representation.
It's a visual cue. Yeah, so it's like a visual cue for you. See, I don't...
That's why I gravitate so much towards Harmony's note system. Because it's a perfect marriage of the two. It uses the same sort of mindset that coders use, which I'm very fascinated in, and I like how they sort of connect and cause things to happen. But now I can visualize it. I can see the boxes connecting into each other. I can see them reacting off one another. I can see it looping back on itself. And then I can build all of these crazy machines. Ask me to write it in syntax, you'd have no chance.
That's fascinating because I could write the syntax, but it takes a little bit for me to pick up on how to use the visual part.
So maybe that's why Nodes as a coding language has never really taken off, because the kinds of people that are going to be gravitated towards being programmers are those who have more of a natural instinct with numbers, as opposed to, well, people like me who have a fascination for it, but no talent for it.
I wouldn't say I have a talent with numbers, but I'm not... Like, I don't have any challenges doing it.
Well, I'd say this is the very definition of what a talent is the what there is instinct for. You have a bit of a natural boost that you just have it. Talent is one way to learn something, and then skill is the other way.
Skill is just banging your head against it until it works.
Yes, exactly.
So, that's how I learned to draw. I'm not a talented artist. I'm a skilled artist, if anything.
Yeah, I think I have very, very little talents like that. Most things I've learned have been from just raw pain.
Oh, I learn much more through pain than I do through anything. I mean, if anything, the mistakes are what is instructive.
Yeah, and I have a weird time when hanging out with people who are very naturally talented because, like, I have so much admiration for just how good they are. And whenever we hang out, like, I'm, you know, asking all these questions, being like, oh, how do you do it? How do I be you? But then also have to swallow this very difficult pill of, I will never be you because you were just born better than me.
Is it fair to say that, though? Cause have you actually honestly had this discussion with any of your friends who are just quite good at it? Like, I mean, dig into what they were doing as kids. Were they drawing the same anime character repeatedly? Or were they, like, how long have they been drawing throughout their lives? Because I remember reading an article that the people you think are talented, in fact, were just doing it at a very young age to begin with, and they don't really think about
it. It's twofold, because there are definitely, you know, very talented people who haven't gone anywhere. Sometimes it can be their downfall because, you know, like, oh, you know, school comes very easily, so they don't have to put in much effort to get a passing grade, and then the real world hits them really hard. So I'm talking about the kind of people where they have the talent to get a bit of a natural boost, but then they also have the skill, the passion, the determination to really unlock that full potential. And then they just go super Saiyan, and it's just kind of like, oh, well, I get to be happy that I know you.
I was going to say, you're friends with some pretty incredible people then.
Well, it's interesting how many, I didn't realize till later, have this sort of thing that we're talking about where, you know, being able to visualize stuff, but then, you know, that sort of superhuman level where it gets to the point where they're able to see shapes, colors, and texture for foreign concepts. You're like those who have perfect pitch because every note has a color or every number has a texture to it.
Yeah, okay, I don't have any of those superhuman abilities, but I've heard about that before.
So that's what I'm sort of talking about when I say talent and born with it kind of thing. It's not like, oh, you're not just born as a better artist, but you are actually sort of just given from the start an extra skill or a sort of sixth sense that other people just don't have.
Yeah, we have this in our notes. We have it written down too. It says, for example, there are some people, when they hear a piece of music, they see colors.
Yeah, that absolutely exists. And, you know, like, when I was sort of testing this out with someone, I'd like, you know, bang a fork on the glass and just be like, what color was that? And they'd be like, oh, blue. And I was like, what?
What?
And they'd be, and then she'd be like, you have a very brown name. I was like, what?
Oh gosh. That almost sounds insulting.
Apparently that wasn't a bad thing.
I want to know what color my name is. Come on.
Well, it would be different to the from whoever's sensing it, I suppose. But I've also met those who, like with the first example, didn't know that other people don't experience this.
Exactly. That's in your life, that's how you see things. So you assume everybody else thinks the same way you do or learns the same way you do.
It's this weird spectrum where at one end of the scale, you can't visualize it in your head at all. And then on the other end, where you can visualize it so clearly that it ends up being given extra properties that just come to you for some reason. And I am so envious of that. It's not funny.
Yeah, like there's a comic I read called Space Boy where the main character, everything has a flavor. So when people are talking, she can identify what flavor they are. So she could tell when people are lying.
Cool.
Right? And stuff like that. And if the person is bad or what kind of attitude they have because their flavor. And it's...
Wait, is this fiction? Is this like an actual superpower? Or is this like...
It's an actual thing that exists, but this is a comic, right? It's just a fiction comic, but it's an actual thing, which is, and there's a name for it. It's just you associate things with flavors, I guess. And anyway, I don't know. I don't know how much research the author put into it and stuff or anything like that, but I would assume some. Usually when you're doing a comic with something like that, you've researched how it works. If maybe he knows someone who is that way. I don't know.
Totally. Like, it was just getting so frustrating as to, because I've wanted to learn code for so many years, and I was just like, why isn't this happening? And I think it was somewhat an epiphany to hear this story of, the woman who can't visualize things, and how bizarre I found that, because I find visualizing stuff relatively simple. In fact, that's the way that I remember stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, and even amongst us average, you know, normal people, quote unquote, again, there's different learning styles. So like for me, a block of text is useful, but hearing somebody lecture about it is the worst possible thing. I just don't, none of that will stick. I have to write it down.
Ah, well, that's That's interesting.
Yeah, if someone's talking to me and I write it down, then I'll remember it. But, and that's part of the reason I can't really remember people's names, because it's audio. So what I'll do is I'll turn around and write their name down in a book, and then I'll remember it. But other than that, it's just gone.
Okay, that's very interesting. I think it depends on the scenario there, because like listening to an audio book is fine. Listening to like a lecture or something like that, that's a bit more of a struggle. And I think I know the reason why is because like if I'm listening to something online, like an audio book or something like that, it's because I'm working at the same time. In a lecture hall, you're sort of just sitting there. Maybe you've got a notebook and you're writing things down. Like writing things down, like notable points, obviously that helps. But I think the key difference here is that my hands and my eyes are occupied. If I'm scribbling something down, something that's maybe fairly passive, then my ears and my mind are open and the information sort of just soaks in. If I sort of just have to sit there, like in a school hall or whatever, it's very, very agitated. You know, I'm getting distracted easy. I need to be doing something. And, you know, all the information just bounces off because I enter my mind palace.
My mind palace.
Right? I just start thinking about stuff. And I'll never forget when I had, because like back when I had like students and stuff, it was more of like a general, I used to like kids camps in the holidays, and they were all sort of like sitting around and one of the adults are talking, and there was, one kid there who had a bit of a reputation for just being a bit of a misfit. It's always disrupting and making noise and, stuff like that. And there was one time where he'd started playing, like a game on his phone, and you know, the other adults are kind of being, oh, put the phone away. And I was like, no, hang on. Like, just let him, something's going on here. So let him keep playing that. The adults are all talking and they asked a question. And suddenly he speaks up with the most like in tune, like intelligent answer of everything. Right. So the fact that his hands and his eyes were occupied, everything was just, boom, it was going straight in. But those had to be doing something. As soon as an adult being like, oh, no, you're getting distracted by the phone, took the phone out of his hands, he'd immediately start, you know, bopping people on the shoulder, starting conversations, disrupting other people as well. It's an interesting phenomenon. Definitely depends on what the thing is. Like, being like a simple game, you know, there's no dialogue, there's no audio, it's only occupying senses that are currently not in use.
Right, okay.
So like while editing, for example, I can listen to music that has no lyrics.
Yes, me too.
That's fine. But listening to like a song with words while editing a video with words, impossible. I think it's a similar idea.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Like listening to music, I find, and this is the one thing that in the survival toolkit, it says, you know, one of the things is don't listen to music and anime at the same time. And I have to disagree with that because I find, probably not just for me, but keeping that part of my mind occupied helps me get into the zone.
Indeed. I've often muzzled over that page because it's a very large page. It really drills the point in. I'm sure it's that big because he's received a lot of protests for it. So I'm like, okay, if it's this heavily emphasized, there's got to be a reason. But yeah, I think I agree. Almost everyone I know needs to listen to music to some extent, but I think it depends on the task at hand. If it's doing cleanup or just filling in with flats or something like that, then I can be like, I can be watching a movie on the side, you know? Like it's such a mindless task that you can be consuming media on the side. But doing the roughs, I think that's the main thing it's talking about. When you're planning a scene, when you need to be in the mind of the character and in the scene, that's probably going to need a little bit more concentration.
Yeah, I can't. I have friends who do that too, and I actually cannot watch a movie, for example, and do work, like do drawings at the same time because I'll get absorbed into the movie. And it can't just, but you know, music with lyrics is okay as long as I'm just doing those rote tasks, like filling in colors.
There's a strong difference between multitasking with a film you've never seen before and one that you've seen like 1,000 times and you know it by heart.
Oh, okay, that's different then. I could probably handle that. But, and like, as far as editing goes, if I'm editing audio, I cannot be listening to anything else. It has to just be the audio, and I can't be doing anything else.
Okay, so you can't even have, like, an instrumental playing at, like, 20% in the distance?
No, because I need to be able to hear if there's noise in the audio. Like, in the speech form and stuff. Yeah, yeah. So, gotta have complete silence.
Maybe that's one reason why I struggle with audio, because it's like, oh no, I can't listen to anything else. It's weird how that the absence of extra media tends to form anxiety now. Maybe that's just a millennial thing, I don't know.
Oh no, I feel like that's definitely a millennial thing. I feel sorry for you. You gotta learn to just not. Just be alone. Be alone with your thoughts.
Do you not count as a millennial?
No, of course I count as a millennial, but just barely. Both of us are that. I think I'm a year older than you are, maybe, now.
We're at the front end, yeah, yeah.
We're at the front end, yes. So, I mean, we are millennials, but I can't imagine how distracting life must be for someone 10 years younger than me. It just, everything, you've got to be on your phone constantly, have to always be plugged in.
Oh, I'd be nuts. I'm very grateful for the very specific decade that we grew up. There was no social media to post cringy teenage stuff on.
Oh, God. Could you imagine? No, I wouldn't want to be a teenager with that crap around. That's just awful.
But the fact that the internet still existed so that there was a place to... Well, where you could meet like-minded people outside of your real life. But the internet was still small. I like how the internet is now, how it's, you know, grown a lot. That's what I mean, like the sense of progression with our age, I think, has been very convenient. Also, it seems like the large majority of people who use the internet are around our age, just coincidentally, because the kinds of topics and themes that we see a lot of tend to be, maybe it's just the algorithms like tuning itself to...
That too, though, that's a little bit disturbing. See, we were around before algorithms, so we didn't get served ads that were very specific. It's like I get ads about art and animation all the time.
Well, I was going to use the example of how like there's a lot of, you know, people complaining about like, oh, you see like outrage culture and so many political discussions on the internet and stuff like that. Oh, you know, that never used to happen. And I think the only reason for that is because people our age tend to talk about things like that. And people our age use the internet now.
Yeah.
You know, 20 years ago, maybe less so much, it was mainly just teenagers making willy jokes.
Could be wrong. I don't know. Are we talking about multitasking and like listening to music at the same time as drawing and whether or not that's okay? And yeah.
Yes, it was in those lines. I was about to do a very loud exclamation yes as to that's it, but that's only one step closer to solving this puzzle.
Oh, wow.
Maybe we'll end up editing out a little bit of this little scavenger hunt. I think it's more because I'm not writing things down. It's like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to bring this up in 5 seconds. I don't predict that we're going to go off on some landslide immediately off to whoop land and never come back and end up spinning off into the next 3 episodes by accident. My memory is atrocious. It's why I need a book. Short-term memory, I can't remember a damn thing. Long-term is fine, though. That's why we talk about nostalgic stuff so much.
So long-term is in, like, 10-year span.
Think of it like RAM. I have very little RAM.
And so you probably forgot everything we've talked about at this point, so I guess we'll head it off by saying in the next episode we will talk about how many frames per second the human eye can see and how many gigabytes big a brain is.
Jeez. All right, thanks.
All right, see you next time, everybody.